All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the fourth podcast. Tonight I have a very exciting guest. It is the second of the rulers of TCL, Makilla. I'm breaking the podcast into two parts because Makilla and I had a lot to talk about, and it was intriguing and insightful, and I think you'll enjoy it. But before we get to the podcast, I want to give a shout-out to our sponsor, Brian. Brian would like me to remind you that unlike Pennant Wars, CSFBL is and continues to be free. He would also like me to tell you to not worry about him because Brian believes that silence is golden. So in that sense, he is a bullionaire. Brian. And now, on with the show. Makilla! Yeah! I got my music on. I got my tattoos on, I got my sunas on, this podcast is long. I got my CM dropped off, I got my TCL turned off, I dropped the pounds off, I'm about to dust this house off. I am Makilla, DiMaggio is better than Wiley. Makilla, fuck police brutality. Makilla, I know my music's screaming, fuck it. Makilla, I got Patrick Stevens, ha ha.
But tonight we get even.
All right, and we are live. I say everybody's a special guest, and this one is no different, but this one is the former TCL head boss. He was a community manager for the game. It is Makilla. Welcome to the show.
Howdy. Oklahoma, so, right?
Yeah, Oklahoma. I got you sooner rather than later.
Howdy, y'all.
So we were just talking briefly before we started recording about how to say Makilla, because during the podcast with Phoenix, he said something crazy thing pronouncement that I had never heard before, like Makilla. So you were kind of starting to tell me the story. Tell me the story behind the name.
Mid to late 90s, I threw together a random, completely random, with no other than the M being a name in my name. There was no other point at it to start. So, yeah, that was it. It completely random. Come to find out, it actually is a word, though, in another language, and it means walking stick. And like I was telling you, I don't know the correct pronunciation. I to this day don't even say it really out loud because it doesn't really mean much. It was a combination of letters that was thrown together, and that's what it is.
What language does it mean, walking stick?
I don't even know. So, good question. Yeah, and this will be very not safe for work, as all of them are. But if I'm going to be free here, there's going to be
go for it.
So, just heads up to anybody listening. I swear like a sailor. So it is from Basque, and I'm probably saying that wrong. Basque. It's a walking stick. That's what it is. It means. It's like a ornamental type that was given to like chieftains, I guess, in their traditional culture. Yeah, something different.
Yeah, I'm reading it while you're talking. The thing's pretty badass. You got pretty lucky here that this turned out to be a word, and it's a walking stick that apparently in some of them is a secret weapon. You pull it apart, and part of it's a club, and part of it's a spear.
Oh yeah, no, it was a pretty badass looking thing once I found out what it was. I mean, for all I know, I could have ended up with a word that meant shit in some other language. I mean, so it was a very large coincidence that it even meant anything, and it is kind of cool because I remember one time, there's one I found that had a knife that was in the it was, yeah, I hit a knife within the cane itself. So
this
hey.
Thing is super badass. It says here, now I'm on a different page that says a lot of shepherds use it to guide their flocks, but when they were confronted with people trying to steal their sheep, they split it apart and beat them and stabbed them.
Yeah, it became what's going on.
Fantastic.
That's fucking cool. I like it.
Yeah. So maybe
yes. Nothing though.
Well, you know, I'm sorry. You know, ever since I've gotten back from Peru, I believe in the universe trying to tell you things sometimes. I think this is trying to tell you something right there.
Do I need to be a shepherd?
I don't know. Maybe, yeah, or stab somebody. One
stab
out of two.
Somebody. That was, I figured that was the alternative. We're going to start stabbing people.
Yeah, see wherever it goes. So the other thing, oh, no, you haven't even heard this yet since I haven't put it up. But I'm putting up the podcast with Ken later on today. And during it, I don't remember exactly how it came up. Oh, we were talking about me gambling. Mm-hmm. And somehow I started talking about the 2006 game between Boise State and Oklahoma.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, and I mean, I realized right when I brought it up, like, I couldn't wait to talk to you about it. Was it the Sugar Bowl or Fiesta Bowl?
Fiesta Bowl.
Fiesta Bowl, yeah. So I claim to this day that was the greatest football game in history, pro, amateur. Can you say that even though you were on the wrong side of it?
I can objectively remove myself from the situation and agree with you. It was a phenomenal game. But when my memories and putting myself in the game, that was a hard one to watch. That was not fun.
It had to be the most brutal thing. And you know, when you know, we,
it's definitely one of them.
You and I have this unspoken pact that if Wisconsin and Oklahoma aren't playing each other, we like each other's teams. Mm-hmm. But for me, like, watching that game, watching the three fourth down conversions in the last 2 minutes in overtime, the hook and ladder, the Statue of Liberty, I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. And then Adrian Peterson just blasting through and scoring the touchdown to start overtime. It was a great game.
Yeah, I think I'm going to take that walking stick now to Ian Johnson. He was the Boise State running back that scored on that Statue of Liberty play. That amazing game. I mean, like I said, if I remove myself from it and just try to look at it from two teams playing a game that I enjoy and have been around my whole life, it was a phenomenal game. It is definitely one of the best games during my lifetime of pro or college. But yeah, it was like, it wasn't even like saying like riding a roller coaster is the wrong thing to me, because that doesn't even give it justice. It was, your heart was ripped out if you were invested in it at all type game. More than once. That was the killer thing.
Yeah.
You know? It was more than once.
Both sides got their heart ripped out more than once.
Yeah. It was, you know, it's tough with those games because when you look at college football as a whole, you have bowl matchups that happen every year, and obviously the bowl matchups that we know them are going to be different here going forward because of the format changes. But you would have bowl matchups where you in BCS, the BCS era specifically, where one team had a lot more to play for than the other. And I'm not making an excuse, but Boise has been one of those teams that in their BCS matchups, not just against OU, but against other teams, they've had more to play for than the other teams. You get, and that was where that game, it became obviously a giant slayer type game. But in reality, Boise was a really freaking good program. They still are. That game pisses me off because I was a fan of Boise as a kid. I mean, a kid that I played high school football with played for them in the early 2000s. So I always had a soft spot for Boise. Dan Hawkins came from there, and he's got ties to Willamette University. Which is where I've got some friends that had some ties to there from playing in the Pacific Northwest. One of my old coaches coached there. And so, the Pacific Northwest isn't, while it's big, it doesn't have a lot of sports. And so, inevitably, you interact with a lot of people from those neighboring states. And that game made me hate Boise, though. I hate the Blue Field. I hate Boise. I can't stand the Blue Field. I see the Blue Field and it makes me want to puke. like I said, that game changed my feelings of Boise 100%. But it was, they played a hell of a game, and yeah, I hadn't thought about that in a few years either.
Sorry about that. Well, because growing up, you're from like really far northern California, right?
Yeah, where I spent my high school years is far, far northern California, hour south of the Oregon border. We were pretty much more southern Oregon than California, in a cultural feel. I spent my years before that on the coast, a little farther south. My folks are from the Bay Area as well. That's where the majority of my family is the Bay Area. My brother's in the Bay Area now. He came back. He and his wife came back from South Korea about 6, 8 months ago, and they're in the North Bay now. I've got 20, 30 first cousins in the Bay. So that's kind of where my family centered at from my youth days. I relocated out here when I was 18, so I've been here in Oklahoma since then.
And you played high school football, and did you play college football too?
Part of a year at a JC and then tore my ACL. That was when I did it. Yeah.
Oh, really? What position did you play?
Offensive tackle. I'm 6 foot, and I knew I was never tall enough to play at any level beyond that. And so it was kind of a deal. I tore my ACL in practice one day, my left ACL, and that was that. And I knew that was that. I was like, you're never good enough to play any further than this anyway. So little college north of where I went to high school, and I left high school my junior year. I moved out of my folks' house when I was 17. I left high school my junior year, tested out. I was working full time my junior year anyways, or I was leaving high school at noon and doing what was called a work study program. But so yeah, I was already moving on with life and knew that I was doing other stuff, and the sports were fun, but it was never going to be anything that led me anywhere. So I was going to my senior year in high school. I spent at a JC, and I played there that year, and that's when I my left ACL and my MCL, which is your interior ligament as well. So not fun. Yeah, it was about a year of rehab actually. That quite sucked.
So when you're playing college, how do you maintain that weight? Because there's no way with your body type that weight was natural. Like you had to just constantly be trying to keep weight on, right?
No. Honestly, for me, it was never a problem gaining weight. I had no issues with that.
What did you weigh while you were playing?
220-ish.
Oh, so you're really undersized.
Yeah, I was 5'10", 6 foot in that range. I wasn't a big guy. I was at 220, 225, 18, 19, 20, and then I really gained weight after that because I stopped playing a lot of athletics and became more sedentary.
I thought maybe you tore your ACL because you just had more weight than your body was
No, I
designed to hold.
specifically, I had all we were simply running drills. I had all my weight on my left knee. Was we were in a line. It was offensive line, defensive line. We're simply running through some drills, and a defensive lineman fell forward, and his helmet hit the outside of my left knee as he was falling, and just buckled my knee over. And like I said, I had all my weight on my knee at the point. I felt it.
Jeez.
I could feel a pop in it right when it happened. Went over to the trainer, and he. I remember he's saying, well, maybe it's just hyperextended. And I'm saying, okay, good. Maybe it is just hyperextended. So then they take me to one of the local sports hospitals, and yeah, a guy has me lay down, and they do that typical ACL test. You always see him where they shake the joint, and he immediately went, oh, your ACL's gone. Oh, great. Thanks.
Oh man, it's amazing that doesn't happen more. You see these offensive linemen that play for 10, 15 years. How are they still around? How are their knees, especially the knees, how do they stay healthy? It's crazy.
One thing you'll notice now, if you watch offensive linemen or defensive linemen, they all play with knee braces now. And it's become more of a prevention thing than a reaction. In the past, when you saw a player playing with a knee brace, it was generally because they had hurt their knee at some point. Now it's more of a, we're going to put the brace on before you damage your knee to help. Because as a lineman, you don't need your lateral agility as much. And I'm not trying to say that, especially professional linemen aren't. Guards that pull a lot and things like that, centers, they're very agile. Don't get me wrong. And you look at certain blocking schemes on certain teams, and there's tons of lateral movement. But it's not like being a wide receiver. It's not like being a skill position where you're moving laterally is important as your ability to move forward and backwards. That's the thing with knee braces, is they hinder your lateral movement. And for better or for worse, that's kind of the point with an A, with knee ligaments, is with alignment, they're trying to restrict that lateral movement to risk them tearing a ligament. That's the purpose. So.
Wow. Yeah. So, I'm kind of segueing into the first time that I saw a picture of you. You had to be at one. You're bigger then. I mean, you're wearing your Oklahoma shirt, and that's where the term Makilla Gorilla came in, because you're a big guy. And I was Facebook stalking you a little bit right before we started this, and I saw some recent pictures of you. You've lost a ton of weight.
Yeah, I chose when I quit work and decided to go back to school, which was in late 2011, early 2012, when I made that transition, that I was going to get myself mentally and physically back to a better place. I don't like making excuses, but I was not happy where I was at in my life. And a lot of it was because of what I was doing for a living. Stress was really high, very sedentary. So between those two things, it had led to creation of a lot of bad habits. I grew up in an extremely health-conscious environment. Not only the home I grew up in, but literally the town I grew up in. It's one of the areas that focuses on promoting health. And, you know, I've shared some stuff about my folks over the years. And, you know, my father, for example, has like 5-6% body fat. And it's not been a thing where he's at a point now where his metabolism is pretty insane, but that's because he was always an endurance athlete freak. He worked construction for a living and wore bags for a long time. And you know, so he was always, his metabolism has increased over his years. But he was eating organic food and growing his own garden in the 70s. And was eating organic and local then, and cutting out red meat and things like that. So I grew up in that type of environment. It wasn't that I didn't know, in my opinion, what to do. It was just applying it to myself. And due to what I was doing for a living, I was picking up more bad habits and I wasn't applying the good habits. So literally, I went through one day and threw everything out in my kitchen and house, every piece of food, went and rebought everything and said, okay, this is what we're going to do from now on, eating. And then I made sure I got myself more active again. And it was just going back to what I knew to do. But yeah, I've dropped. I mean, I honestly don't know what my peak was, because I know at one point I weighed on a scale and I was like 365. And I'm guessing I got a little heavier than that. But I know that's the highest I ever stood on a scale. But I mean, I'm at 195, give or take, right now. I'm not trying to lose weight, and I haven't been trying to lose weight for a good 6 months at this point. I'm simply just building areas that I want to build and getting to a point where I'm level. I wanted to do it slowly over a couple of years because it's the best way to do it. Fad diets, quick weight loss is really hard on your body, actually, and chances are you won't keep it off if you do it that way. So you've got to go through the habit changes. You've got to go through the lifestyle changes, in my opinion, to make it work. And so that was what I focused on. I do most of the cooking in our house due to the setup of me being back in school right now. And so I try to do more of that stuff. My wife works quite a bit right now while I'm doing the school thing to pay the bills. So I work part-time and help here and there, but my responsibilities are more around the house at this point. So with me cooking, though, it makes it where we eat what I want to eat. So it's been a better thing, I think, for our entire family. And I feel personally a lot fucking better than I was 3 years ago. I mean, it's pretty ridiculously noticeable to me.
Yeah, that's awesome. I posted a picture on Facebook probably 9 months ago when I decided I was going to start getting healthy. And after I took everything out of my refrigerator that I deemed not to be healthy. And, mm-hmm. and if you look at the picture on Facebook, literally there's only salsa and some mustard left.
I remember that.
Yeah, photo. Nothing. And
that was what it was about. I never realized that was probably lack of attention on my part, but I remember that photo.
Yeah. And you know, I have a really skinny frame, but mm-hmm. anybody that saw me in Minneapolis knows that like I wasn't healthy at that point, and I've dropped, you know, 35 pounds since then. So I look a lot better, but more importantly, I feel a million times better just every day, everything from when I wake up to the energy I have at 8 p.m.
Yeah. More energy levels, better throughout the day. You know, things like that. More easier to wake up, not craving anything in the afternoon to keep myself going, you know, not needing anything to keep myself going. Those types of things have been huge. You know, I know you've seen some photos of my dad, for example, and he has a frame that is very different than mine, actually. I'm built more like his brothers. My dad was the anomaly in his family. The majority of them are built like me, a little shorter, a little wider, a little stockier. This is the lightest from a weight standpoint, this is the lightest I've been since like 16, probably.
Wow.
But I haven't watched, I'm not watching pounds. I weigh every week. I mean, I've been doing it for 3 years, and I'm a creature of habit who's OCD. So I have to weigh now at this point, or it starts like making me twitch. But it's not, I'm not watching pounds. I'm watching body fat percent, and I'm watching, you know, BMI and those types of things, and just making sure they're trending in the directions that they should be trending. And I'm measuring inches more so as well. And those are the things that I'm watching and working on from a gym standpoint. I'm consuming a pretty level. I leveled off my calorie. I increased my calorie intake about 3 to 4 months ago because I at that point was decided I was level and I wasn't going to try to lose more weight. When I cook with a lot of whole grains, very little red meat, lots of veggies, lots of fruits. Those are just the main things that I do right there. And then I'm active every day doing something. My daughter and I, you know, she, we're going to do a, she wanted to become, she did a, started a thing called Girls on the Run with her after school program this year, which is just a thing that where they were signing up girls and they go run with them a couple days a week. And, it was something she wanted to do. So we went and signed her up for it, but we're going to do a 5K together, at the end of May. Her and I, and so we've been starting to run more and more, and we went this morning, and so we just try to work in, whether it's walk around the block or whether it's me going in my exercise area and working out for an hour by myself. It's something every day where you're being active, you know. I found that to work for me. Everybody's different, so I don't want to come across as preachy or saying, you know, this works for everybody. But in my experience, it does have to be the lifestyle change. You have to start there, and then the rest of it falls in place afterwards.
Yeah, you've made a lot of lifestyle changes. You mentioned quitting your job and going back to school. What are you going to school for?
I'm in a mechanical engineering program right now. I'm at a point where I'm debating on whether I want to work towards a master's or not on it. It's actually something I'm going back and forth on right now. I'm enrolled at two schools in the fall, and that's what I'm enrolled, and then we'll plan on dropping one of them. And this is kind of making my decision this summer, because if I'm going to try to pursue the master's for it, then I need to transfer, because where I'm at, a master's in it is not offered. So I'm debating on transferring in the fall to a different school and pursue a master's there. We'll see.
So what's the ultimate goal? I mean, what kind of work would you go into for this?
Where it all stems from for me is I spent a lot of my teenage years working in a shop, and I was always fascinated with the metalworking and the tools side of metalworking. Mechanical engineers are the people that build and design tools in any industry, whether it be a medical. That's kind of a blur between biomedical and mechanical engineering is – when you go into the doctor, the tools that are being used are designed and made by an engineer. But then on top of not just tools, the manufacturing process of making those was, you know, the machines, the lathes, those types of things that were used were generally designed by mechanical engineers. So I've always had a fascination there, and it became a point of I got sick of being or tired of being the one who was using them, and it became I want to be the person who builds them. And I've always had a very mechanical mind. It's been easier for me with the time my head works. And it's honestly, it's been a full circle thing. I kind of ran from that stuff because it was what my dad did. And so you run from that as a kid, I think, in some ways. And now I'm like full circle. I'm like, okay, that's what I want to go back to. So I decided I wanted to go back for engineering. And then mechanical offers a lot of opportunity. That's where my interest is. But other things you can do with mechanical engineering are HVAC, heating, ventilation, AC, all that stuff falls under mechanical engineering. You have energy, which is a huge growing sector, of course, in our country right now. And it's a very wide sector, but energy usage and design is a lot of mechanical engineering as well. So the other general thing you can do with it that I've kind of toyed with is a consulting standpoint, which, for example, like in California, they have laws in place now that any building plan has to be signed and approved by an engineer. Doesn't matter what type, but they have to be. This law, this ordinance went into place about a year or two ago in California, I guess. And so it's made the demand where there simply has to be consulting engineers now that will review plans for private firms and approve them and go forward, because not every construction company has an engineer on staff. Actually, most of them don't, for example, because it's too expensive. So that kind of field as well with it.
Can I make a suggestion? I think you need to get back into newspapers. I think they're coming back. Did your newspaper go out of business yet?
No. They're still there.
Don't say no, like it's a foregone conclusion. They're going out of business any day.
Well, the thing is, with the company I worked for so long, they have a pretty large foothold in this market. Uh-huh. There's really no other media company in this state, honestly.
Except for the internet.
Well, you know, and that's, of course, but I wouldn't do... Do you define that as a state level, though?
I'm just saying. I'm just giving you a hard time.
No, I mean...
Once you quit newspapers, it wasn't any fun to make fun of you for working at a newspaper.
No, it pretty much became impossible. I really never liked who I worked for either, so never really... I was as critical of them as anybody. The company that I worked for, the paper I worked for had been owned by the same family for about 100 years.
Right.
The Gaylord family, very, very, very conservative.
That's the same Gaylord family that owns all the hotels, right?
You got it.
Yeah, I mean, they have like the Gaylord Bowl in Memphis or whatever it is.
Very wealthy family. They're based out of Oklahoma City. They always have been. This is the third generation right now that is the controlling interest of their family. But they sold actually the newspaper part of it, which was the Oklahoman. Mm-hmm. They sold the Oklahoman about 3 years ago to a guy from Colorado. I do not remember the name. He owns a few newspapers throughout the country. But it was one of those things. It happened like 2 months after I quit, and it made a lot of things make sense because they liked me. And so I was privy to information, but I wasn't privy to every little piece of information that was being shared at the VP level. I knew there was something that was going to happen. I couldn't quite tell what it was. There was a lot of movement that was starting to happen. I knew that there were some more layoffs that were coming and things like that. And I was getting out because it was a sinking ship, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It had been a sinking ship for a couple of years. They were making a lot of extremely poor decisions, in my opinion, on how to handle obstacles related to the digital side of things. And the worst part of it was they were on top of the ball when it first started. They realized that print media was dying, and they put a ton of money into building a website, going digital, and trying to get digital subscriptions and things like that. But some very poor decisions. The publisher that's there is no longer there. And they made some changes. Like I said, it got sold. The majority interest of it got sold. Who knows where it'll go from now, but it's no longer a local. That was the one thing they had from it. It was a local state-owned paper for 100+ years, and they can't tout that anymore. It's owned by an out-of-state company. So I think they may lose some foothold in the area, but, man, they're so entrenched here right now. It's kind of disgusting.
Yeah, I think whoever the primary guy in the Gaylord family is, I think he was in the top 10 or 15 richest people in the country, too. I remember seeing him on a Forbes list.
Probably at one point. Right now it's controlled by a daughter. Her name was Christy Gaylord, but she is in her, if not early 70s, I would think she's at now. And I don't think she's been involved a whole lot in the day-to-day. Her father, who is no longer alive, was Edward E.K. Gaylord. And he owned the Grand Opry in Nashville. He owned CMT at one point. He owned the newspaper. He owned multiple stations here in Oklahoma. He owned radio stations. He was the one who bought all the hotels. He was worth a lot of money at one point, yeah. He was probably the person you saw.
Yeah, yes.
They owned a freaking waffle company I found out about, found out about a year before I left, and I'd worked for them for like 10 years at that point. I mean, it's different. It was amazing how much shit they had. I will say one of the smartest things they have done, and I would take from them, from their family with business, was diversify, diversify, diversify. They were in so many different things. So right. With newspaper and things like that slumped, it didn't impact their overall well-being much.
Yeah, Yeah. Well,
so I'm glad as hell to be out of that world.
I'm sure. I'm sure. And now you get to play Mr. Mom a little bit and
Oh, yeah.
go to school and do, you know, experience some freedom.
It's different. The Mr. Mom role was definitely a challenge for me to accept the first 6 months, just because I've been paying taxes since I was 14 years old. I mean, I got my first job when I was 14, above the table and paying taxes on. So it wasn't, I wasn't used to this. It
Yeah.
was an adjustment. It was hard. A lot of my identity was wrapped up in working somewhere because it's what I'd done for so long. So I
And
struggled with that for a bit.
you quit TCL sometime around then as well. Are you in any leagues right now?
Yeah, I'm playing it. I never, I, it, when I walked away from most of CSFBL, I dropped everything but one team. I kept my team that was my very first team, which I still have and always will keep. It's in Earth Baseball. I got that team in like 2003, I think. So I'm never going to probably let that one go. But yeah, I dropped down to that team for a few months, got myself in a better mental state that I was in. Got my life prioritized better because I was being pulled too many different directions. And then, yeah, I'm playing with four teams right now. I picked up a few different teams. Again, one of them was an old league that I had been in. So I picked up a team there. And then I play in CBF. It's a league I've played in before, and I picked up a team back there again. And then I play in LEG as well. So I'm
Oh,
in those
you're an
four.
LEG?
I am in LEG. You
Traitors.
never leave the TCL forums, so I know you don't
No,
know outside of those forums.
isn't that a crazy stat that the guy with the most posts and 99% of them are in a single league? It just doesn't even make sense.
Well, the scary thing would be if you probably looked at the top 50 or whatever and looked at how many of those people's posts came out of one league.
Yeah, most likely. So I'm looking at your team in Earth Baseball right now, so I'm guessing let's see here.
I took over that team in 88, and it's in the 80. That was in the 1988 season. It's in the 2080 something season now, I think, or 90 something season. The league's been around 100 years now. I picked up a team in the 8th season it was around.
So like Adrian Nash and
Oh, yeah.
Patrick Gamish,
Oh, I've had. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Fond memories of all those
those
guys.
are your guys.
Oh, yeah.
Adrian Nash, jeez, he was a monster.
I want to. Yeah, that's the division four of that. The division I'm in of that league has always been super competitive, and there hasn't been a lot of turnover in that division. It's been the same group of guys in that division for like five, six real life years. But that league, Earth Baseball, was formed from a group of guys from another game. The name Earth Baseball was taken from the game Earth 2025, which was a turn playing game in the mid to late 90s. That's where, like, my screen name, for example, that's what it came from. We all play. I can remember being in biology class when I was in high school playing this role playing game, this word game. And we played Earth 2025. Well, eventually, a group of guys found CSFBL in the early 2000s, and a few of us came over and started a few different leagues. And Earth Baseball is one of the ones that's still around. But yeah, all of us at one point knew each other in that league from a totally different game. And we all found CSFBL from one guy finding the game and then going back to the forums over there and saying, "Look at this fucking cool baseball game I just found."
But
So we ended up making our way over there. We ran an off-site forum. Earth Baseball didn't even use the CSFBL forums for years of our existence because, like I said, we knew each other from elsewhere. We ran sites elsewhere. So we had our forums and everything completely separate from CSFBL.
I'm looking at the. You're going to have to explain this to me. Not only are you in a division named McKilla, but there's another team in your division named the Basque McKillas, just
Okay,
like we
well,
were just talking about.
I know that fucked with me for a while. That team has Feliz in that. The owner of that team, he has been in that division for a long time. He named the team that when he took it over. I have no fucking clue why he named it that. I've never asked him to this day. But yeah, I've been playing against a team in my own division with my name. It's weird. The reason why the division is named right now me is because what we do every year is we rename the divisions to the division winner from the year before. So the division names always
Oh,
change to whoever the division winner was the year before.
gotcha.
We're unique.
So did you quit being a community manager and being the TCL head commissioner at the same time?
Within probably a week of each other.
Yeah. So what led to that? What was the straw that broke the camel's back there, or what
Which
was the
one?
buildup?
Which one? I didn't. It wasn't the same thing,
Well,
but it was.
let's start with the community manager then.
Being pulled too many different directions.
Yeah.
That would just be the fairest way for me to say that.
And then TCL, like, I could see the buildup of
Yeah,
you just
you
getting
do.
fed up with the league over probably a full year. Like, little stuff was starting to bug you, and it was just getting to a point where it was just becoming drama, and you needed to get away for a little bit, huh?
Yeah, no, you're exactly right about that. I can speak. I'll speak more freely about TCL. I mean, the CSFBL thing in regards to the CM thing. Really, really good group of guys. I don't want to knock any of them. They all have very strong qualities to themselves.
Well,
It became
you know who you should knock there is me, because you remember you and I got the
right.
community manager job at the same time, and you got it to actually make a difference. I got it to make a point. Like, for me, it was like, okay, a couple of years ago, they were trying to kick me out, and like I was the outsider. Now I'm the man,
Yeah.
keeping everybody else down. And
Yeah.
so like for me, it was just like an ascension thing. And then, but I didn't do anything with it. I wasn't helpful in any way.
Well, this is basically the thing. I think I will say this. I'll go on record as saying this because I've told it to him in private, and I probably said it to others in private as well. Reds catches way too much shit that he does not control. He has been put in very bad positions by Brian more than once, where he was left after something was decided, and then he had the rug pulled out from under him, basically. And Reds is sitting there going, "What the fuck?"
Yeah.
So he can also be a little intense at times, and he knows he and I communicate less at this point due to some of that. But a lot of the shit he gets is not necessarily due to his decisions 100%. And I can, that was part of my frustration and part of why I left. Not because I was frustrated with Reds as well. And he and I have discussed this over the last year or so privately, and we communicate better now. But it got to a point where I was tired of getting shit over stuff that I had absolutely zero control over. And it wasn't even getting shit. It was the fact that we as a group would discuss, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. This then would get communicated to the community, and then everyone would leave except Reds.
Yeah, well, and I don't think it's a big secret. If you hear the not so subtle undertones from what Bengal says, or what Trickett will say privately, or Reds, or you, I mean, the frustration there is the owner's absentee. I'll be the one to say it. I mean, that's the difficult part. And the frustrating thing for me, and I haven't told anybody this, is I've reached out to him multiple times to try and buy the game from him, just because even though I don't know how to run the game, I know how to participate and be active and let smart people do smart things and just get it away from him. And the last offer I sent him was obscenely more than what the game was worth. But I just feel like it's just so painful right now to have him do nothing that I'd rather buy it and then hand over partial ownership to the people that will make sure it stays alive and better, because it's pretty damn painful now.
You are not the, you are, I'm sure you know this, you're not the only person that's made offers on the game.
Yeah.
You're not the first person that doesn't have a development background that's made offers on the game. There have been others. There have been people with development experience that have made offers. I think, in my opinion, I have never once spoken to Brian about this, particularly. I have a lot of respect for Brian for what he created, and how he has maintained the game at a losing cost for so long. I
Sure.
mean, we do have to remember the man literally had the servers for his game at one point in the basement of his house, and was taking a loss on it heavily. So I like I said, lots of respect for him. He's a very, very smart man and is a very sharp developer. He went through a really rough patch in some personal stuff, and at that point, he completely disappeared from the game. And I wish he would have at that point made a change. But I think Brian feels that CSFBL is a legacy game within online simulations. And I have to agree with them. There were not a whole lot of simulation games on the internet in 2000. There really weren't that. There were some, you know, there were some simulation games or type idea type games that existed, but they weren't on the web yet.
Like, so Weeble was on, that was his game too.
There were some. Hat Trick came pretty early. There's not a lot, but you know, the Out of the Park Baseball, the Baseball Mogul, those types of things, they weren't online. They hadn't even been really designed yet.
Yeah.
So I think he thinks that I don't blame him. I'd have some pride in it too from that standpoint. He's supposedly Brian is involved again, is going to be involved a lot more heavily. If that's the case, I think there's probably some potential for some good direction, because I think when he's involved with CSFBL, because it is a baby, it's his, I think we benefit from it. But when he goes in those inactive periods, and I'm not talking months, I'm talking years, mm-hmm. it puts someone like Reds, who's trying to keep the game afloat, in a bad spot, in my opinion.
Yeah, fair enough. And then at the same token, I think Reds would say himself, he's not always the easiest guy to deal with. And so when, you know, he sometimes gets himself to the point where he feels like he's cornered, and that's when he just starts lashing out. For all of our sake, I think, you know, he was the one guy that was actually doing something with the game and while Brian was gone and developing stuff. And you know, there was no way to thank him enough for that. But then at the same time, you know, he was driving himself into lunacy, you know, over small stuff.
Well, and I agree 100%. That was part of why, you know, myself, I removed myself from that situation with those types of things, because Reds needs to be the behind-the-scenes person. I think he knows this. I think he'd admit this. Him and I have talked about this. And I know myself and Pimp, for example, would constantly try to tell him, dude, just don't even respond, please. You make it worse for us when you respond. Don't type. Type if you want, but don't post. Type it out. I don't care if you type it out. But then delete the damn thing and let us talk. Let us be the ones communicating. And that's where he fits better. But like I said, he got put in positions where he couldn't be that person. So that wasn't fair to him. The TCL thing, though, to get off of the CSFBL group, the TCL thing, you know, because I communicate with you pretty openly and have for years about a lot of different things, that I was at a point where I was just burned with the whining. The fucking whining was getting to be ridiculous. I felt like I was babysitting, which to me made me feel like I was managing, which made me feel like I was at work, because that's all fucking management is babysitting. And it's what I did for 10 years. And I was like, I don't want to do that. That was why that's why I'm back in school. I don't want to fucking babysit anymore. And so it became to a point where I didn't like logging into the forums. I didn't like logging into the game. And that was a lot of dealing with the bitching and moaning out of TCL. So I love a lot of the guys there, as you know, the whole group. I mean, I feel that we have some very close friendships that will last lifetimes, that have been formed out of there. So it's none of that, but I knew that for me to not become bitter towards certain people, I wanted to remove myself, because I was starting to become bitter and hold animosity towards individuals that I didn't want to be, that the stupid game wasn't, I enjoyed him more as a person than I did the game.
Yeah, I can completely sympathize with that. You know, I was talking, I think it was Bengal I was talking to when he was here in Madison, and I was talking about why, you know, I run a hotel. I've run hotels where I had 640 employees. I currently run one where I have 115 employees. I'm used to leading things, but I've never asked to be a commissioner of TCL in the 10 years that it's been there. There's been a really good reason why, because I don't want to run it. I have enough in my life that I need to run, and I don't need to have a group of employees in the league that I'm only in to have fun and be recreational. As soon as it gets to a point where I'm making decisions on and thinking about it as politically in any way or dictatorially, I don't want to have anything to do with that.
No, and that's it in a nutshell right there. I mean, that's, you know, nailed hit on the head. it's, I think for most of us, I can't speak for everybody, obviously, but I think for most of us, that league exists as an outlet from our real lives. And it became more than that, obviously, over the years, but it's what I think CSFBL as a whole is for most of us, is it's something outside of reality where we don't have to be the responsible, politically correct boss or whatever, you person. It's, you can just be who you want to be there. And it was becoming where I couldn't do that. And I was like, well, shit. You know, I still need that somewhere in my life. So I need to back away from here and go get my shit right. And that's basically what it came down to.
Yeah.
I'd love to play in the league again. I'll throw my name in every time new teams come about, just because, like I said, I like the group of guys that are there immensely. And I'm in a better spot personally with my own life. And I can admit this freely than I was 2 years ago. And it wasn't just an online baseball game, but it became where, for me, the online baseball game was becoming too big in my life. And I realized that. And that's why I removed myself from a lot of it. So my life needs to be focused on other things. And that's just my escape. And so now that I'm realizing that, and I've been back there for quite a while, I'm much happier with the environment as a whole.
Yeah. So, and while you were there, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about your team. You won the World Series in 2030. You were around during that, right?
Yeah, I owned that team from 1998 to
50.
50. It was late 40s, early. Yeah.
Yeah, I
So
just looked it up.
I had it for 52 years and won one World Series. Yeah, so that's not very good. But yeah, I won the 30 World Series. The 20s were probably my best decade. I very much enjoyed matching up with Wolf in that decade. Him and I were in the playoffs quite a bit out of that division. I got the better hand during the 20s most of the time. So I was very happy about that. Because he ruled the division most of the other time.
Yeah, during the decade of dominance, you beat them in the first round, the 2022, 26, and 27,
Yes.
and
And
30.
the 20s were a very good year overall, which accumulated in the 2030 World Series, because I got fucking knocked out of the LCS twice by Eclectics. Now I remember that his goddamn Boston team, which wasn't even that good, knocked me out in the LCS twice. And it's all fucking Jelly's fault.
Jelly's fault, yeah.
Because this goes back to Jelly and Eclectics, their whole thing. Jelly was helping Eclectics. I say, you can't see me, but I have my hands in the air. I talk.
You're raging. You're raging right now.
I am, because
Max Smash.
fucking Jelly was teaching Eclectics little trade secrets and had built the pitching defense team and twice upset me. I would have had three World Series, I think, during that run with that team. I only got that one. It's fucking Jelly's fault.
I can't believe that is proof that you can polish a turd right there, because Eclectics teams were shit for 60 years, and then all of a sudden, magically, they go to a couple World Series. And then Jelly wasn't shy about taking credit for it either.
No, that they got into their spat because Jelly was taking credit for it.
Yep.
Eclectics was
Then he
calling
quit.
back over it.
Then he
So
quit.
he plays in one league still.
Oh, he does?
Yeah, I'm in a league with him. You can find him through that way. I'll just say that. I don't know how much he likes everybody to know he still plays.
No, he's a good guy. I wish I would have been able to see him when I was I went to Atlanta to go to Food and Beverage University, and I was supposed to go on the flight simulator, and I told him last minute that I couldn't go. Well, the untold part of that story is I really wanted to go, but the problem was I w fly into Atlanta. I started drinking in the airport, and by the time I got to Atlanta, I was so shit-faced drunk I couldn't even walk. And so I had to sit in the hotel and just try and soak off the bender before. I
Well,
was such a piece of shit so often, and that was a good example, because I missed a chance to meet him, go on the flight simulator, have a great story.
yeah, I got a buddy who's a contract. He works on contract now for for Tinker Air Force Base here, which is a massive Air Force base here in Midwest City where they keep all the AWACS at. And
Nice.
he is a former pilot. He's in his mid-40s now, former pilot, but he does contract flight simulations for him now. He took me one time to one of the flight simulators there. Pretty fucking cool. It really, really incredible stuff.
I bet.
That's something that a lot of – I've actually interacted with a few engineers that have work on those flight simulators. What they do at a lot of the Air Force bases, I guess, is they've gone to where they hire, instead of code monkeys, to write code for the flight simulators. They hire electrical engineers because the electrical engineers have a better idea of the circuitry that's being used because it's fairly advanced circuitry. And then they just teach the engineers how to code. So we've had a lot of interaction with them from that standpoint. But it's the flight simulations. Pretty. If you ever get an opportunity, I would definitely try to go check it out anywhere because it's a pretty awesome machine seeing these things.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So let me back up to your team for a second because yeah. I'm looking at the screen here.
Two best hitters in league history, by the way, I should mention that.
Yeah, I feel like I'm looking at a different league because there's a guy named Pet. I can't read his name. Let's talk about Levi DiMaggio.
Drink Slinger is a jerk for running Wiley for so long.
Oh, Wiley. Yeah, god damn. You know what? That guy crept up on us, too, because Slinger was not a very good promoter. And actually, that's why where the Patrick Stevens Who thing started is you weren't promoting him a lot, and all of a sudden, he was racking up all these career numbers. Well, that happened by Wiley times like five, because all of a sudden, the first time Slinger ever posted about him was when he was 10 home runs away from passing Stevens.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. And now he has like some 906 home runs or something.
Well, and if I remember right, I haven't looked at the league stats in quite a while, so it's off memory, but Stevens and DiMaggio should be number two and three in league home runs still, because I had number one and two for career home runs, which was Stevens and DiMaggio when I walked away from it, and then Wiley crept up and passed both of them.
Yeah, Stevens has 908 and DiMaggio has 857.
I know. I have those numbers memorized.
Dwight McElvin? How do you say it?
Well, I don't know. We always pronounced it McLovin because none of us knew how to say it. Yeah. That was right after Superbad came out, remember?
Yep. Yeah, he has 812 stolen bases, too. He was a good player.
Yeah, I acquired Stevens in a trade with M-Hob. So I know everybody hated training with M-Hob and backed him. I got Stevens from him. So as far as I'm concerned, M-Hob was awesome to trade with.
Yeah.
I feel like I got over on him pretty good on that deal. I remember it was for a number two pick, I think. But Stevens was like an afterthought to the deal. It was the 18-year-old that got thrown in at the end of the deal because I wasn't quite convinced. And it turned into be Stevens who had 908 home runs. And then DiMaggio I drafted. And McLovin came from Kit. It was a trade with Kit. Kit drafted him. And I got him in a trade. That he was part of the trade that sent the fucking catcher, Lewis, that Mets had. The Douglas Lewis and Glenn Bell, the third baseman that Mets teams were built around. Douglas Lewis and Glenn Bell.
Yep.
Those guys got sent from my team because I took over Linear had the team like a season in between Mets and I, but those two guys left and went to Kit's team, and McLovin was one of the players that came back.
Wow, I don't remember this trade. You really got over on M-Hob because you gave him the number two, but then you got his first, second, and third rounders for the next season. And then you got Patrick Stevens and then some pitcher named Michael Levine that I don't remember.
And he wasn't half bad. Levine was a pitcher that was – he was the bridge, the gap pitcher, one of the – you know, I need someone to carry me a little bit. And so Levine was actually who I was focused on more than anything. It was Levine and the draft for the number two. And then I was like, I'm still hemming around, you know, about it. And he says, well, how about I throw in this 18-year-old? And he was nothing – I mean, he didn't look anything special. He was 18. He made like $360,000. So it's not like age salary was through the roof or anything. And his slugging looked nice to me, I remember. And that was the whole reason. I was like, okay, he looks like he's got a slugging in the 90s. I can remember thinking it looks like it's in the 90s. So I ended up getting over on my team, and it was like a 99 or 100. I think it was 100, actually. So
yeah, that's a beautiful trade.
Yeah, that's everyone talks about trading with M-Hob is this bad thing, and I have good memories from it.
All right, at this point, I realize that we were running a little bit long, so I'm going to split this into two podcasts. Thank you for listening, and please come back to listen to the second podcast where Makila and I dive into everything from music to drugs. Catch you on the other side.
But tonight we get even.